Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
The British-based singer-songwriter Nadia Sheikh has an incredible knack for writing deep, meaningful songs with choruses that can stick with you for days. Her journey so far has been quite the ride, from supporting Stereophonics across 19 dates of the European Kind Tour, including sold-out Manchester Arena and Cardiff Arena shows, to warming up the crowd for Texas and PJ Harvey at the Mementos Alhambra stage of Noches del Botánica in Madrid, to gracing stages at festivals like Glastonbury, Isle of Wight, Kendall Calling, Why Not, FIB Benicassim Festival, and performing on Spanish national TV for Los Conciertos de Radio 3. Having released various EPs independently, the half-British Spanish artist has always found a place of eclectic connection between her emotive and intimate songwriting, full of musical and lyrical depth and anthemic guitar-driven sounds, creating a concoction of raw but fragile beauty fueled by her pop sensibility. Her songs have amassed a ton of support from the likes of BBC Radio 1, BBC 6 Music, Radio X, Radio 3 in Spain, Planet Rock, Clash Magazine, Rolling Stone France, Lion of Best Fit, and Fresh on the Net, to name a few. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Nadia Sheikh.
Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
Hello, well, thanks for having me. I am currently in London in the UK, and I'm good. I'm a bit tired, but it's, yeah, good.
Let's rewind. At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you think, okay, this is my path, and how did that journey progress?
Well, I always loved music since I was a tiny kid. I remember being obsessed with the Beatles when I was about 7 years old. And my uncle's a musician, my uncle Hernan. So I saw him playing guitar around the house and stuff, and I was like, oh, he's cool, like, I'd love to be like him. So I wanted to learn music. I wanted to learn guitar when I was about, I think it was 7 or 8 or something like that. But I never did. I got a guitar for Christmas. Never really learned it. And then when I was about 11, I got obsessed with Avril Lavigne to the point of not being able to get the songs out of my head, not being able to sleep at night because I couldn't stop hearing the songs. And I grabbed the guitar and I just taught myself, started learning through YouTube, and my uncle would send me like chords, like little chord books and stuff. And I taught myself how to play guitar, and I decided I wanted to sing without having ever sung before. I was like, I just want to be a singer. My mom was like, sing to me. And I was like paralyzed. I was like, I couldn't make a sound. I just decided, I don't know. I don't know what it was, but I think that gig. So I saw Avril Lavigne live when I was 12. My parents took me to see her live as a birthday present. And I just saw her at Manchester Arena and I was like, I want to do that. I just went, ah, that's what I want to do. So then that's when I took out the guitar and started to teach myself how to play it. So I think that was my light bulb moment.
And then when your mom asked you if you could sing and then you froze and you couldn't utter a sound, how did you then build the confidence to allow the sounds to come out?
I remember she was making dinner and I was just in the living room kind of just trying to sing. And I went to the kitchen. I was like, Mom, I want to be a singer. And she was like, sing. And I was like, I can't. So I'd be like, okay, I'll be back in a minute. And I'd go to the living room, like practice my song, and then I'd come back and be like, okay, I'm going to do it now. And that happened a few times. And I think eventually I sang and she was like, oh, all right. She's not too bad. She sang sort of in tune, I guess. And I guess I just, every time I'd learn a song on the guitar, I'd sing it. And I slowly started to just get more comfortable with singing. And then it was my music high school teacher. They were doing like a Christmas concert and they were looking for people to perform. And I just auditioned and I'd never sang in front of anyone. And he picked me and I was like, okay, well, now I have to sing in front of other humans. And I think in a way, I've always kind of just put myself in the really uncomfortable situation without thinking too much about how uncomfortable it actually made me and how scared it made me. And just sort of built confidence by just getting burnt every single time. I don't know if that makes any sense.
how do you mean burnt? Not necessarily failing, just like putting yourself out there and confronting it.
Yeah, rather than failing, just kind of like, oh, this really hurts, but I'm just going to let myself get a bit burnt and then next time it will hurt less.
So the whole concept of putting your hand on your hand on the stove and just like, oh, I know how to do it and what to do it and how to proceed.
Yeah, well, most of the time I didn't. I just did it anyway. that was the concept. I was just like, well, I'm just going to do it and see what happens. And yeah, I think in a way, sometimes I don't think twice about certain things. I just jump in, which can be good and bad. But for this kind of situation, I guess it's kind of good.
Were there any aspects of it when you were jumping in that you were like surprised, like, oh, I didn't realize that this was actually part of it?
I think at the beginning when I was getting reactions from people, I was a very shy kid. I was very shy. So actually performing for me was a big sort of stove moment. Like it was hot. I wasn't a confident kid that dances around and is like center of attention. I was pretty shy. So I'd go on stage and not say my name, not say the names of the song, just say thank you. When people would clap, I'd just play one song, they'd clap and be like, thank you, and I'd play the next one. And I guess when I started getting reactions from people and they were quite positive, that would be a bit of a surprise. And I think one moment was when I got a slot to play like an outside stage, small stage of a festival they were organizing near my hometown in Spain. And I made a demo and I had loads of CDs and they were meant for friends and family, sending it to radios, I don't know, maybe pitching it to some people. And I played the gig and after the gig, can we buy your CD? And I was like, oh, okay. And we opened the box and I sold like 50 CDs in like one moment and no one knew me. So I think that was quite a surprise and that sort of triggered me to do more, to want to do more and more.
I love me a CD. I love the journey of the choice, the unpacking, the booklets, the song from what one to whatever number. I'm not sure if you are aware, you may or may not, that physical on a massive comeback, vinyls a couple of years ago in the UK, 5.9 million sales, the biggest since 1990. Last year, also in the UK, there's a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on. There needs to be a certain number of exchanges every day for a product to be in the basket. And because of the upsurge of CDs, CDs are now back in the basket again. And the research is showing it's the younger kids, the teenagers diving into this world, not necessarily the older, nostalgic people, in inverted commas. Then we have streaming platforms that people consume music on. What are your observations of the landscape at the moment?
It's tough because, as everyone knows, well, most people know, streaming doesn't pay. And you end up, as an independent artist, I mean, I'm self-funded, I do everything myself. I run ads and you spend more money running the ads that then don't get clicked than the amount of money that you actually make from streaming, unless you're obviously streaming big numbers. But if you're not a marketing expert, people are like, yeah, you can crack the algorithm and get it rolling if you're making good music. But if you're not a marketing expert and you don't have the money to pay a marketing expert, how are you doing that? And then you're still throwing your pennies at the ads and trying to do them yourself with like social media, I don't know, research and reading blogs about how to run ads and stuff. So physical is still the way to go. You play a gig, people come, they like your music and they'll buy something. I have noticed actually a decrease in CD sales. A few years back, people would buy more CDs, I've noticed. I printed vinyl a couple of years ago and I still sell it. And it's not the latest release, but people still buy it. And I think it's because people like that thing. It's like a moment. It's like a souvenir. Like you go on holiday, you buy the magnet, you go to a gig, you buy the vinyl, and it's in your collection. And it's like a piece of art, I think. So I have noticed that. For artists, it's so much better to support someone with that, just buying the physical, because it literally can mean that you can break even to get back home and pay for the petrol if someone bought two vinyls. And as a lover of music, I love seeing the pictures, the listening to the CD while you're reading the lyrics. It's a different experience because I'm not just it myself. I'm just listening to Spotify, whatever. I'm just like walking around and it's passive. And sometimes I like something, but I'm doing something else. I won't even like it. And then I don't know what song it is. Now you can go back, but you couldn't before. And I've missed so many music, so many songs that I liked. And I was like, oh, I don't know what that was. But just sitting for a moment for like 40 minutes and just listening to 10 songs and reading the lyrics and absorbing it and knowing your focus is on that. I think that's something that is a little bit lost in the current landscape of how music is consumed. And it's a shame because you don't integrate yourself into the song or into the music or into the world that album is creating as much.
So it's interesting that you said that you think well, most people know that streaming does not pay. I dispute that and debate that with you because I was speaking to a group of 10 people and I was speaking to a group of 8 people on separate occasions. These are people who sort of, you know, general public people that maybe like a couple of artists, a couple of songs, they stream, they listen to Spotify, they maybe go to a concert every now and then, maybe once a year or so. And I said to both groups, I said to group A and B, if an artist has had 100 million streams of a song, how much money do you think they got? Group A said $50 million. Group, you're laughing. Group B said $1 million. And I said, actually, no, it's like $500 or $1,000. And they were actually shocked. So I think this is a great education piece for the general public to know and understand that artists are not making a lot from streaming. I've seen Snoop Dogg, I've seen Ray, I've seen a bunch of, you know, artists speaking out around it. But there definitely needs more of an education piece. I mean, in the sense that, yes, great, we've got the streams and it's a business card, so to speak, for us to travel and tour, which helps pay for wherever we're going and our income. But it's also that understanding that, okay, yes, we've got 100 million, but to know it's okay, it's only a couple of thousand.
Yeah. And it's a struggle because you end up creating something that takes a lot of out of you, but take that away. We love making music. So even if it can be a struggle or if it's like emotionally draining, it doesn't matter because we love making the art. But the cost of the art is 100% not absorbed by the amount of money you make from streaming. And then also there are print-on-demand services now, which I'm actually exploring myself. But if you want to make CDs, you also have to like pay for them before you sell them. So it's like a constant debt before you can actually make something of it. And in a way, it's a business. You're setting up a startup. But people need music. It's essential, but it's also not essential. You can spend a day without listening to music, but you can't spend a day without eating food or wearing clothes. So in a way, it's an essential for humanity, but it's not an essential need that you sort of... It's a different... You can't touch it unless you're obviously buying a CD or a vinyl, but you can't touch a song on Spotify. So it's less of an obvious business model when you're trying to build a startup that ends up being successful, I guess, if that makes any sense.
I agree with you. It's not essential in that kind of stuff. And yet, it's not free to make. And a lot of the public have now think, okay, well, it's free, it's disposable. They don't realize equipment, writing, creating, collaborating, time in the studio, marketing, publishing, all of that adds up. And it's not free for you guys. So there's definitely an education piece. So this is our bulletin part of the podcast. The listeners to say, guys, support all the artists in whatever way you can.
Yes, absolutely.
How do you create music and how do you create a song?
I guess it depends a lot on the song. Usually when I'm writing, I'll start whether I've got I'm playing something and I come up with a chord progression or a little melody or a riff or something like that. I'm like, oh, this is kind of cool. And I start threading. Sometimes I'll just be mumbling a melody and a lyric that I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Comes up and I start threading a story. My phone is full of voice notes and full of lyrics, ideas. I'll just be walking around, going to the shop and be like, that's interesting. So I just write it down. So it's like a little bank of ideas I can always pull from. I've also done some co-writing, which is also really interesting. Both for myself and for other artists. I've had a few songs come out that I've co-written for other artists. And I really enjoy it as well because it's a very different process in the sense that everything can be challenged when you're doing it with yourself. You can challenge yourself, but it's just you. Whereas there's a pull and push, not in a negative way, in a very positive way, with another person. It's like, okay, what about this lyric? But what about this? And it might be, if you have a really good synergy, it can be like a building and you're sort of like adding more sweetness and seeing how that line or that melody or that thing that you're working on can be bettered. And one thing I find super, super interesting is you kind of go into other people's brains. Because if you're trying to talk about something specific, you're writing a song about XYZ situation, whatever it is, something very specific that you've discussed and you're trying to tell the story of, would say things in a certain way, but then you see how other people would say them. And I find that so fascinating. And sometimes they'll say something, I'm like, that's genius. I'd never thought about looking at that in that light or that perspective, or just saying it that specific way. And I think that's just really cool. So I really enjoy that. And then I work with my band as well, my drummer George and my bass players. We co-produce together. I'll either have like I call them vomit demos, because it's just a vomit of ideas. And I'll send them to them, and like we start threading ideas together and like breaking down the whole vomit demo and keeping the good bits or getting rid of the bad bits, and or sometimes even just building things from scratch. And then other times I'll just come with a song and be like, guys, I've just written this, I think it's really cool. And we start sort of building the tracks together. And that's kind of how the newer songs have been built. Some of them that I've co-written, I've co-produced with the producer, so the co-writer as well, who's a producer. And then something like Memories, I remember we had a demo session booked in with my band, and the night before, we were working on a specific song. We were going to finish that. And the night before, I just wrote Memories, and I came in and I was like, guys, I've just written a song. And we were going to do the other song. And then we were like, no. Let's do this one, because it just had something and it just felt like it needed that. So I came in with this blank song that I literally just written the night before, and we started working on it. But there isn't a specific pattern that is always followed. It's depending on the song.
You mentioned a term a couple of times, threading. What do you mean by that?
I guess it depends on the context. So when I think I mentioned it when I was talking about the songwriting. So I'll thread the story. So I'll be pulling from maybe the mumbles that were saying, most of the time they're like, there are mumbles, but it's so subconscious that it's kind of you expressing things. But then I might be saying a line or a word that I can actually associate to a thought or something that happened to me recently. And then I'll go to my notes on my phone and pull out those lyrics that were related to that space. So I'll be threading the story. Other times the song just comes out. It just comes. So there's no threading. It's just out.
What's coming up over the next few months?
This year I've been releasing music, and I've been playing all around actually, and I've got I just released a song called Just a Shadow. The thing that I've been doing this year is I've been releasing Spanish versions of certain songs, so there'll be a Spanish version of that coming up very soon, and it's leading towards an EP. There's the EP, there's some more live dates in the UK and in Spain, and yeah, I'm excited to sort of have the baby, if that makes sense. Just yeah. Having the finished product and culminating this year of music. And got a Patreon community called the Demo Vault. And I've been sharing some of the demos. Well, I share demos every month on there. And I give people like previews of the new songs and stuff. And it's interesting how some of the songs that they've been liking most from the demos are the ones that are coming out, which are the ones that I've also resonated more with. So I'm excited to keep on sharing that in tandem with what's actually being released, so people can see the process. And I think that's quite cool as well. But I have so many songs. So there's the EP that will be coming out this year, but I'm already thinking about what the next songs are going to be as well. So yeah, definitely Spanish version of Just a Shadow, the EP with some new music, and the live dates coming up.
When you write a song, you have the English version and then you have the Spanish version, as you mentioned. Do you approach the writing or the translating of it the same way that you would the English version?
It's complicated, because it's obviously the phrasing of it. You need to sort of follow the phrasing. It needs to rhyme. But it can't be a literal translation, because that would never work. So it can be kind of complicated sometimes, finding the right lines that keep the sentiment without obviously being a literal translation, but that also sound nice in a song and like rhyme. So I approach it in that sense. It's never going to be exactly the same, but it has to tell the same story and have the same feeling. For example, with Memories, there was a few lines that were actually a little bit hard to get, and I had so many ideas and I tried different things, and in the end I came up with something. I was like, that feels good, that makes sense, that sounds good. And but it was hard to get a couple of lines to actually sit nicely, whereas with Just a Shadow it was pretty straightforward. So I think it depends also on the sound of the vowels and everything, because Spanish is way more open than English is. And yeah, so I approach it in that sense. It needs to maintain the sentiment and make sense, but also in a way it's its own song. It can't be just a copy.
Any plans to release a full album at any point?
Yes, I am dying to do an album. But as we were speaking before, streaming doesn't pay and albums are very expensive. So I am an album artist. I know that. I like bodies of work and sitting through listening to something that makes you feel a certain way and that you can go back to. But at the moment, just being independent, self-funded and doing everything myself is quite impossible to make an album at the level I would want to make it, with the quality. And if I'm going to make an album, I want it to be the best I can do. And right now, I physically can't afford to do that.
Well, let's put it out there. Then the next period, all that will come through and we'll have multiple albums on CD, on vinyl and cassette.
That'd be great.
What do you enjoy about performing live?
Ooh, I love it. That's how I cut my teeth. Going back to the being really shy, I would go on stage and I'd just play and play and play. And when I was about, I think it was 17 or 16 to 17, once I did that gig, I was telling you about the one about the CDs, I started to get calls from local venues and like bars, restaurants, everywhere, all around my local area in Spain. That's where I was born and grew up. And I was playing gigs every weekend. My weekends consisted of my parents and I in the car with the speakers and the guitar in the back and just driving wherever it was that I got the call and just performing. So I absolutely love it. And I think it's the physicality of it, just being in a space with other human beings sharing a specific moment, obviously sharing your art, which is very close to your heart and it tells a story, but it connects in a different way. I don't think there's anything like live music. Nothing compares to live music. And I was speaking to someone the other day and it's like, when you go to play a gig, actually, Charlene Spiteri, I was talking to her about this because I opened for Texas in Madrid in June. We were talking about that live experience and it's like, for an hour or an hour and a half, the person that walks into the venue is in that venue with you and they can forget everything, all the troubles, everything that's going on in their lives, all the stresses, they're just there and it's happy. It's like, well, even if it's like a super sad emo gig, it doesn't matter. It's like a moment of release of emotion and being in the moment and sharing art and like an electricity. Even if there's two people in the room, it literally doesn't matter. And I think that's what makes it really special is that sharing of that weird energy that you can't really replicate whilst also in a way giving your art and the thing you've created that you hold so close to your heart. Even if I'm having a bad day, I'll be like really, I feel horrible or whatever. And then I'll just sit down and sing for 2 minutes and that suddenly I feel better. So I think that's what makes it so special.
I'm that dude right up in front jamming, dancing. I'll take my cell phone out, couple of songs, couple of videos, and then I put it away. I notice these days a lot of people are posting and tweeting and videoing and more and more and more. You reference being in that moment, being in that energy, that interaction. Do you not find that people who are constantly on their phones potentially are taking away from that moment, or it's just where and part of where society is at the moment?
I think it's both. I do agree that you can film certain things and people will go back to that moment, because everyone sort of interprets things in a different way. Maybe, I don't know, that person had someone that they wanted to go with to the gig and they can't be sort of filming it to share it with them, which is in a way an act of love as well. I do think people film too much and there's a lot of posing. And I saw this thing that went viral recently where someone went to an Oasis gig and Richard Ashcroft was supporting them. And they were Shazamming Bittersweet Symphony. So it was kind of like people were like, oh, this person probably had the money, got through the queue, got this super expensive tickets. There's this like diehard fans of Oasis that couldn't get tickets. And then she's like, someone was saying they're Shazamming the national anthem. So it's kind of like, that's kind of like the level of posing I was thinking when I said that. Oh, I had this cool gig. I'm going to do a story. I do stories when I go to a gig, but I'll literally pull it out. I'll do one. That's it. Maybe if my favorite song comes on, I'll pull it out, record a chorus because I'm so excited and I'll put it back. But that's like a memory. It's like a memento that you keep. So I do think that that gets in the way. But I also think it's part of how things are today. And yes, you can fight it. And I know certain artists tell you, like, they have drop your phone at the entrance. They don't allow phones in the venue. I think that can be really cool. I've never done a gig like that, or as in like attended or performed a gig like that. I think it could be really cool. But also, phones are part of who we are, part of what we do. And if someone wants to ruin their entire gig by just holding their hand up, as long as they're not disturbing someone else.
It's interesting you reference posing, because I've been to quite a few shows where it's a favorite artist, they're near the front. The person turns it around, so their back is to the artist. They're filming themselves singing with the artist this big behind them, and they're missing the whole show. They're just filming themselves with the artist a little bit in the back. I'm like, what are you doing? The artist is right there in front of you, and you're missing the whole thing.
In a way, if you do it for a second, that's like going to the Eiffel Tower and taking a selfie.
Yeah.
It's like, I was there, like, I want to remember this. I think there are people that live for the filming of the gig. I've been to loads of small gigs where there's people that go to so many gigs, grassroots gigs, and that's amazing. And they'll film the whole thing. And the thing that their hobby or their thing to do is then go on YouTube or on social media and they post, that's it. In a way, it's, they're supporting their artists, or they're like, this is my scrapbook of gigs I've been to. Whereas before, maybe someone would take a Polaroid and stick it on an album or something. Whereas now they do that. And I think that's also nice if they want to do it. But I think from what I've seen, most diehard fans, they don't really film the entire gig. Or if they do, they're like this. Their hand is all over the place because they're singing, they're jumping. So it's kind of useless because they are in the moment. But they're just trying to grasp onto it. So I think I agree that you should be in the moment and should be enjoying. But also, you can't really fight phones, I don't think.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever been to many sofa sounds, but that's quite being in the moment. That's like people are there and they're right in front of me, sometimes without speakers. And it's such an intense connection. And they still take that moment to, hey, this is what I was doing. And I guess it's part of how social media is in our brains. We are posing. Why do people take pictures of the food? Because they're posing, or they, like, I don't care. People don't need to see what I'm eating for lunch. Maybe if someone made a really nice lunch, they're really proud of it and they want to put it. And then if they really like an artist, they want to share their love. And in a way, it's good. If someone came to see me, I'd appreciate them sharing on their story and tagging me. Because then it means that they're sharing that they've come to see me, and maybe one of their friends might like it. And then they might follow me and then come to the next gig.
I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 years, 5 hours, 5 minutes, I know your answer will be different every time. I understand that and I recognize that. I'm not saying favorite. I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to 5 artists once we finish this conversation, who would those artists be? And if you can think of specific songs of those artists, what songs would you play?
Ooh, okay, that's hard. I'm going to start actually with an artist that I discovered on, I think it was TikTok or Instagram. I don't know. There's some popped up on my thing recently. His name is Ben Kidson. And I'm going to say that because his song has been stuck in my head. I woke up yesterday and I was literally having my breakfast. The first thing I did, I was like, oh my gosh. I think the song is called Back on the Apps and it's super catchy. It's just the way he describes the whole thing is just brilliant. I think it's really cool. Then I'd say Oasis because I'm going to go see them and I'm really excited. And I'd say Don't Look Back in Anger. I know it's cliche, but when I was 15, I went to see Noel Gallagher. My parents took me to see Noel Gallagher and we queued for hours. We were like front row. This was like Noel Gallagher and High Flying Birds in Barcelona. And I had a big sign that said, named Nadia, dream to sing Don't Look Back in Anger with you. And I was front row and someone we were with that we met in the queue was like, he'll sing it towards the end. I'll give you a heads up. And he'd been watching Oasis for like 20 years or something ridiculous. So he knew, he was a bit diehard fans. He knew all the set lists and everything. So he gave us a heads up. I pulled it out and he looked at me and went, nodded. And then the next song was Don't Look Back in Anger. And he went, we've got time for one more song. Don't Look Back in Anger. Nadia, you're about to get your wish. And he just looked at me and just started playing Don't Look Back in Anger. And I was like, oh my God. And before the chorus, I was like, thank you. Thank you. And he just like pointed at his heart and then at me. And I was like, oh my God. That's why I'll say that song. Wonderwalls, I think they're one of the best bands to come out of the UK in the last few years. And there's something timeless and, like, I think brilliant about his songwriting. And their shows are great. just the energy and the put. This is such great performance. I'd say Butterfly. Then I'll say that's three. Okay. Then I'll say Wolf Alice. The Sofa, because it just came out and I really enjoyed it. And if I have to play anyone right now, I'll say Wet Leg, because their album came out on Friday. And I shouldn't know any of the names of the new songs, but a song of the new album. The album's called Moisturizer, so one of those songs.
Nadia, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
Hello, anyone from the world. Thank you for listening to this if you got to the end. My name is Nadia, and I'd really appreciate if you could give my music a listen. And you can find me on all the streaming platforms and all the social media platforms. And it's Nadia Shaikh Music everywhere. Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.